Welcome to another episode of Founders Podcast. I'm your host, Ash, and this is a show where I interview proven founders and industry experts who share their stories, strategies, and insights to help you build, launch, and grow your business. In this episode, I talk to Justin, the founder of Ascend Labs. Justin loves starting new things. He started a bike share program at UC Berkeley and later worked at Jump Bikes, and Uber bought the Jump Bikes for a lot of money. Justin also worked at other startups. Now he's starting Ascend Labs. It helps new entrepreneurs learn and, you know, understand. Justin wants to share what he learned with others, and Ascend Labs also helps businesses with their plan and make cool videos. So Justin, I'm so excited to have you in the show. So you enjoy it. Welcome.
Hey, thanks so much, Ash. Really appreciate you having me here today.
Great. So do you have a favorite quote, something that inspires or motivates you that you would like to share with our audience?
Yeah. I mean, thing that inspires me the most today is my my family and my kids. So I mentioned to you earlier, I have two kids. Our boy was just born a couple weeks ago, and I have a three-year-old as well. And that absolutely gets me out of bed every morning. And, you know, beyond that, I think it's just helping early stage founders grow their businesses. So,
great stuff. Well, first of all, congratulations once again. So, Justin, tell us about Ascend Labs. What does this product or service do? Who is it for? And what's the main problem you're helping solve?
Yeah, so we help early stage entrepreneurs figure out their go to market motion. You know, I'm leveraging sort of all of the lessons, learnings, both successes and mistakes that I've, you know, had along the way, and really trying to provide that information in a really simple and compelling way for early stage founders. We have a community space where we offer that to folks, and you know, in the form of video content, cohorts, and resources. And so, yeah, if you're an early stage founder, you're building a business, and you need guidance and help and a community around you, we're there to help.
So. Awesome. Great. So before moving towards, you know, a set of questions, would you be, you know, open to share with our audience, how was your experience with Jump Bikes, and what kind of lessons you learned out of that venture? And then how did you ended up, you know, Uber to convince to buy you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I was at UC Berkeley in around like 2007 as a student, and started a bike share program on campus. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, back in the day, we had some bikes. We received a grant from the university to buy some bikes and had just regular locks and pen and paper. And we were just checking out the bikes. Students would write down their name on the piece of paper. We'd give them the key and they would be off. And, you know, that worked well. People were really excited about it and you know, definitely wanted to hop on the bikes, but it became quickly apparent that we needed to figure out how to automate that system. And the other piece that we needed to figure out was how to maintain and manage the bikes. And so we actually found this stairwell on campus, this abandoned stairwell, and somehow got the university to give us the key to it. And we turned it into this really cool operating center, bike shop on campus. And actually today that bike shop has been invested in, and it's turned into like a really beautiful, thriving bike shop still today on Lower Sproul. In sort of, you know, seeking a solution for automating it, I found a way to integrate this locking technology that went directly onto the bike. And, you know, while we were launching this, the first major bike share was going live in Paris at this time. So this is like very, very beginning of bike share. And those systems operated with docking points. So you would have to plug the bike back into a docking station. And the infrastructure that was required for that was really capital intensive. And so, you know, it was a really, I think, kind of innovative approach to put the technology onto the bike itself and just like reduce the cost significantly. You could lock the bike up to any regular bicycle parking rack. After university, I turned that into a business called Green Bike Share. And I met up with some folks on the East Coast who were going through Techstars at the time in Boston. And I helped to integrate, you know, my hardware solution with their software solution. After they went through that program, you know, I found two other entrepreneurs who were just launching social bicycles in New York City. They had this beautiful rendering of a bike that was fully integrated. All the technology, wireless connectivity, and locking mechanism was fully integrated into the bike itself. And that was, you know, the same vision that I was working towards. And so I went down to New York and met Ryan Respecki and Nick Foley. And, you know, they said, hey, we'd love for you to join the team. The problem is we don't have any cash right now. So and I said, you know what, look, I will work for a train ticket into the city. We're going to figure this out together. We're going to go raise some capital and we're going to go sell these bikes to cities around the world. And so we went out and started to do that. I started writing, they're called RFPs, requests for proposals to cities and trying to sell the, our system while we were still sort of building it. You know, we only had, sort of a rendering and prototype at that time. And we were also trying to raise capital. And, you know, at some point, months in, it was kind of getting dire. We needed the money. I was completely out of cash, completely broke. And we had our first 100 bikes on the water coming in to clear customs. And we actually went to a New York tech meetup. And in the audience, David Rose, who's a founder of New York Angels, Angel Group, was out in the crowd. And he saw the presentation and invited us in to a meeting. And it was like the day that I said, you know, if this doesn't happen, if this doesn't work out today, it's kind of like, I don't know, I guess it's over, you know? Yeah. And in that meeting, by the way, we're used to all these people saying, you know, listening to the pitch and being like, yeah, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. We'll get back to you. Right. And in that meeting, he slammed his fist down on the table and he said, I love it and I want to do it. And, he gave us a small check. It was enough to clear customs. But what was more important than, you know, his check was his belief in us and his network. And so he helped us raise our first million. Very quickly after that meeting, and we were off to the races. You know, we spent years building the product, iterating on the product, and, you know, frankly, it took a long time to even just get the lights on the bike to turn on automatically, let alone enable the unlocking from a mobile app. Like, this is in the very early days of iPhones, right? So the tech was very clunky, and we were like really working through the kinks, but we had these great partners, around the country that believed in this vision and worked through it with us. And we finally got to a place where the technology was working, we were scaling these systems, and we were really, you know, starting to take off. And, you know, again, all the other players in the space had this sort of approach to bike share where you had to plug your bike into the docking station. So our costs were significantly lower. We had the, all the wireless connectivity was integrated into the bike. So you had GPS on the bike. None of the other bikes had that functionality at the time. And so like all these really cool things, features and you know, lower price point and just like a cooler product. Like it just was like a slick product. And so we're really, really doing well. And then, you know, about 6 years in, right as we were hitting our stride, all of a sudden there was capital that began to flow into the space. And the first sort of major competitors were out of China. So Mobike and Ofo. And right. They had a different model to bike share. Because they had all this capital, they were able to go and just drop the bikes in these cities. It was different from our approach. We worked very closely with the cities. And you know, I think in the very early days with those models, they were just going and dropping the bikes. And, you know, I think while we did not appreciate the approach of them, like working directly with the cities and thought that was sort of a mistake. One thing that was interesting was that they were able to just, you know, fund these programs outright and cities did like that. They, what happened pretty quickly was Lion Bike came up as a major competitor in the US with that model. And we had some major contracts on the line. They went to the cities right before they were about to fund these programs that we had won through the RFP process. And they said, hey, why are you guys giving millions of dollars to this company for a bike share system? We'll give it to you for free. And it immediately disrupted our model. And overnight they said, you know what, you're right. Pulled the plug on the capital from, you know, the RFPs. And I remember this morning where it was snowing outside, the snow was falling slowly. And we had just lost, you know, the day before this major, major RFP in Sacramento. And I thought to myself, like, if we don't change this business, like today, if we don't reinvent this business, like now, it's over. And we immediately went to work. And there was three major things that we did. We immediately changed the business model. So instead of us getting the capital, the CapEx from these cities, we're going to figure out how to fund this ourselves. But, you know, by the way, we didn't have the cash to do that yet. Yeah. Two, we need to rebrand this company. It was called Social Bicycles at the time. And it just wasn't catchy. It didn't have that, you know, pop to it, that consumer facing pop. And so we said, let's rebrand to Jump Bikes. Mm. And so we rebranded the company, and we had been working on the electrification of the fleet for years. And we were just on the finish line of doing that. And so the timing was like just perfect. And we introduced electrification into the fleet, which just really changed the game. Because before, you know, these bikes were heavy. I mentioned they had all this tech on them. They were like hard to ride and stuff. And the electrification, you know, allowed you to just feel superhuman and just go so fast. And it was, when people got on these bikes, they just immediately had that wow factor, you know? And so those sort of three moves allowed us to reinvent the company. And we all of a sudden were sort of back in the game from like a fundraising perspective. People were interested in putting capital into the company. And we had 100 bikes that we introduced into San Francisco as our first sort of like launch around with the new name and the new business model and the new tech. And Uber got really interested in what we were doing, being that they were headquartered there. And we started talking to them about a partnership to integrate the bikes into their app. So you could, you know, find the bike on their app and unlock it just like you find a car. And so we made that partnership happen pretty quickly, integrated the tech. And a few months later, they put forward an acquisition offer. And what was crazy is like at the same time we had major, major funds offering us, you know, B round capital. And so this sort of like decision, do we continue to build or do we go with the acquisition? And there was a bunch of negotiation and sort of ratcheting back and forth up to the point where, they made an offer that we couldn't refuse. And that's how it all went down. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that you mentioned that when you started getting that traction from the end customers, Uber reached out to you guys because they had their headquarters there. So I'm guessing some of their employees must have used your services, your bikes, right?
Yeah. The coolest thing about bike share, you know, about that model was, you know, these bikes were bright red. They were all over the street and you could see people flying down the street having the best time that they've ever had. And so it was just like in your face. And just like so obvious, it just marketed itself. And it kind of reminded me of like, I remember the first moment when Lyft launched their ride hail service in San Francisco, they had these giant pink mustaches on the front of the cars. And like, you would just see it and you'd be like, what is that thing going down the street? You know? And you become so curious naturally. And so it had that same sort of appeal. And so, yeah, you know, immediately, you know, they're right on Market Street downtown, everyone's seeing these bikes on their way into work. And they're like, what is that? Like, we have to figure out what this is.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Great stuff. So I guess, you know, you have explained it so well that, you know, it included all the ups and downs and all the challenges you faced. And there were like decision, you know, places in the journey where you had to take one side of it. And I'm sure like once the startup or the founders reach at that point, there's lots of decisions they have to make, you know, I guess every day, you know, not just for the product, but also for the company. So Justin, I want to learn more about you, but before we go there, would you like to tell us more about XN Labs and what, so I understand that XN Labs helps new founders who want to get into the founder space or they are already established. How does XN Lab help them in terms of getting to the next step?
Great question. Yeah. So, you know, I think all entrepreneurs face like the sort of zero to one challenge, which is like, how do you figure out exactly what your product business model, what you call like product market fit is. And, you know, there's a number of ways that you can do that. And sort of like really is encompassed in like, what is your go-to-market strategy to figure that out? And, you know, from the Jump Bike days and sort of like all the other startups that I've been a part of after that. So Swiftly is a transit tech company. Denizen is a 3D printing technology company. Replo is a no code web editor. You know, all of those companies, we had to figure that out. And there's a number of sort of like strategies and tactics and ways to go about bringing a product to market and trying to figure out what that product market fit is. And so what we've done is we've really tried to boil down like all of those strategies and tactics and even growth hacks in a way that, you know, we can make it easily accessible for people to apply those tactics to their businesses. And so, yeah, that's kind of like the offering is like, hey, we will help you figure out how to go from zero to one.
Right, right. And how does that works out for Exyn Labs? What is do you guys work with equity sharing or is it a fee involved there? How does that work?
Yeah, so right now it's just a subscription based model. And, you know, I think in the future, we're definitely interested in sort of more of like an accelerator approach where we make investments and like there is an equity component to it as well. Beyond sort of that subscription based offering, we in addition have an agency aspect as well, where we do work closely with a number of our the folks that are in Exyn Labs as well, to help them scale their businesses. And by not only teaching them, but also doing and helping them scale up using those same tactics and resources.
Right, right. And does Exyn Labs service also provides sort of like a networking side of it? Like you guys connect the people who are using your a platform to potential investors? Does that has an element of it in it?
Absolutely. So in addition, just, you know, beyond sort of the folks like inside Exyn Labs, we have an incredible network of folks that are a part of, this community, and they sort of act as experts on their own respective domains. As I've said, I've sort of like productized these different like tactics and growth hacks and resources. But in addition to that, you have the ability to connect with these experts in the space, depending on sort of what your problem or focus is.
Right. Okay. Great stuff. So let's talk about where the story actually began. Where did the idea for Exyn Labs came from? How did you thought about it and how does it all started?
Yeah, so, you know, I have always been in the sort of like entrepreneurial mindset and like always wanting to help other businesses. And I have a lot of folks in my network that have reached out and said like, hey, like, can you help me with XYZ? And so that's sort of like always been in the back of my mind, like, hey, this would be really fun to figure out how to, you know, not just focus on one thing, but help sort of like all of these different companies in a big way, in a broader way. In my last role as a chief business officer at Replo, it's a no-code web editor, landing page builder, specifically focused on Shopify at the moment. When I first met them, they had five customers, and I spoke to those five customers, and they were very excited about the product. And so I said, hey, you know, there's something here. I want to kind of go deeper on this, and I helped that company scale from, you know, five people to thousands of people, thousands and thousands of people in under a year. And there was a number of, you know, I just applied those same sort of principles that I've been mentioning, and, you know, whether they be like cold outbound or like building a content machine or partnerships, all these different ways, mechanisms to growing, we were able to scale so fast. And, you know, I only had hired one person on that team in order to do that. And so, you know, it was done in a really efficient and effective way as well. A lot of it was building sort of, you know, process one, but also just like systems. So systematizing it and then scaling it, automating it. And sort of like removing ourselves from that, from being the bottleneck when you automate. And so, yeah, you know, after my time at Replo, I was like, you know, this makes so much sense to go figure out how to not just dive back into one company, but offer this to, you know, dozens or hundreds of companies. Because at some point, all of these tactics and approaches can be applied to any business. It doesn't matter if you're in B2G, direct to consumer, or B2B. All businesses sort of have the same fundamental principles, and you can apply these approaches and tactics to any business. So yeah, that's kind of like where the seed came from. And as I started to talk, you know, talking to people, and people were getting excited that this is a no-brainer. So
got it. So what I understood is basically SN helps entrepreneurs and founders to unwrap or unveil these hidden venues to generate more sort of like revenue as well as, so for example, if a founder is let's say SaaS product, they have a SaaS product and they have a subscription model, but they have just one source of income, which is subscription for B2C. But hearing your story, early days of Jump Bike, you were trying to get some more contracts with the local councils, I'm guessing.
That's right.
That let you learn so much about these techniques, that it's not just about charging people, you could actually unwrap these different avenues where you can bring more revenue and then, you know, grow like very, very fast. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, I think there's like a few sort of like broader principles on trying to figure out like how the business model can click. And a lot of it really comes down to just testing and being, having that sort of like testing mindset, because you don't know what's going to work until you try it. And so, a lot of times in the early stages, it's a matter of like A/B testing these things. And it's also, I think a couple other principles, like really starting, if you talk to enough people, you can start to sort of like segment and create these like cohorts and buckets of people. Mm-hmm. For instance, like with Replo, it was like, there was a cohort of small to medium sized businesses. Maybe it was like, they had five people on the team and they needed a way to quickly build landing pages. They didn't have the capital to go hire a dev team. And this was a way for them to quickly build websites in a really inexpensive way. There was another cohort of folks that was like big businesses that maybe had a dev team. They had, tons of engineers maybe on the team. But what we found was, the engineers didn't want to work on the website. They didn't want to be bothered by the marketing team to go like launch a new landing page. They wanted to go work on the product. And so this enabled the marketing team to like get rid of that bottleneck, reduce the friction between engineering, and to just go do, create the landing pages themselves. That was like another bucket. Another bucket was like agencies that, were trying to build for their customers too. And maybe they were either outsourcing the dev work, or maybe they had the in-house dev work, but like, that's expensive, especially for like a smaller agency. This enabled them to, again, build landing pages in a really cost-effective way. So there's many other buckets too, but you start to sort of segment these groups and you begin to understand sort of what messaging resonates with those particular folks. And when you do that, then you can really start testing and getting really specific on like the language you're using and the messaging and even like the model, the business model that's behind that. Once you have that, you're in an interesting place, because now you can really hyper-focus your channels and your funnels. That's kind of like the thought process that goes into like, how do you evaluate what's a good business model, and what is the most effective business model for your ideal customer profile?
Yeah. And that's something very important, because a lot of founders, they don't really care about their ICP. They figure out the personas, but then you have to go deeper, understand more about your ICPs, what they want, what they don't want. And, you know, even though when you figure out personas and ICPs, there might be some sub ICPs inside your ICP. So that's also very important. So when you had this epiphany, when you had this idea about SNLab, did you look into the market? Were there other services like that? What was going on? And what did you see from your research that encouraged you to move forward?
Yeah, definitely. There's certainly a number of models out there, and to be, you know, quite frank about it, like, we're in the early stages here as well. So we're very much applying the same principles that I'm talking about to our business as well. And so, some of the models that I think have taken off that I really like, one is Reforge is a really interesting example of, a company that's building really high quality go-to-market content and offering that to early stage founders, to marketers, et cetera. There's a few communities out there that are really interesting that are kind of doing a similar approach. MKT1 or like Exit5, they're doing some cool stuff in a similar way that's more maybe like community focused. There's some really cool tools out there like Intro, which is like enabling folks to speak to, experts in their respective fields, and offering, you know, you can speak to some like the top most respected entrepreneurs in the world. Like, I love that model. So there's all these different models out there. And, you know, I think we're trying to figure out like, what is the best way to offer this to, early stage founders that are trying to do that 0-1 move, which I saw that sort of like a gap in the market, because all of those models that I just talked about were maybe like a little later stage. They weren't, you know, as focused on like that beginning stage. And I think that's where like, it's just such a challenge in the beginning, because you probably don't have a lot of resources. You're really just trying to figure this thing out from the beginning. And it's a hard time. And I've been there so many times, you know, and while it's hard, it's also really fun. It's like it's one of the most fun points of a company. It's like the founding point in that, like, finding product market fit and bringing a business to life. That's really why we kind of zeroed in on that part of of the business.
So you mentioned about the tool Intro, and I think there is another one called Growth Mentor or something.
Growth Marketers or
something like that. Yeah, I've heard about them. I mean, you know, I've actually tried to subscribe to it during my initial days, but then I realized that the most of the people whom I wanted to connect, they were into different time zones, and, you know, it didn't work out for me. But yes, I do remember that. So let's take a step back and talk about, I'm eager to learn more about the person behind this innovative venture. Like, can you take us back to your roots and share with our listeners about your upbringing, your childhood? How did your early experiences shape your journey and eventually led you to become so many times entrepreneurs?
Absolutely. I grew up outside of Philadelphia, in Bucks County. I lived in a few different places when I was really, really young, in Asia, in the UK as well. But I don't really remember those experiences. I was like very young. So most of my upbringing was in, on the East Coast. And I think, you know, even from like an early age, was always sort of just super interested in like launching new things, new like projects and ventures. And actually, like, a funny story, I was a pretty young kid, you know, we had this like a basement in our house, and I would set on Halloween, we'd set up a a haunted house. This is hilarious. And we would charge people to get into the haunted house. I was like, you know, probably like 10 years old, maybe 12 years old.
They were paying you to get into
the haunted. I don't know if they actually, maybe they gave us like candy or something like that. You know? But it was, you know, just like fun things like that. And I was always sort of, you know, looking for just like fun new opportunities. And like, you know, a lot of it to me was about working with my friends and like working with other people. That was like always really exciting to me. And if you ask like any of my close friends, like how many businesses or ideas I've pitched them, how many business decks I've shared with them, they'll laugh because it's like, that's kind of like what I do.
So is that fair enough to say that your friends were the key influences from your family or surrounding that played a significant role in your entrepreneur journey?
Yeah, I would say so. Friends and family. I mean, I feel like they've always been really supportive. And then, you know, as I've sort of like gone through, like, you know, all of these different ventures, it's like the people, my colleagues who are also my, you know, closest and dearest friends as well, were the same people that, you know, we're like all pushing together, and pushing each other forward. So yeah, very much so friends, and colleagues. Actually, you know, it's funny. I posted something the other day about competitors, and in the bike share space, how, you know, from like 2012 to 2019, I think the way that when I look back at the like quote unquote competition, I actually found that, you know, these people are also like close friends of mine now. We would, you know, go around the world trying to sell all these different cities on our own respective bike share programs or systems. And in doing so, you know, would meet these people in amazing places and would befriend them, because, you know, you're on the road and these are the people that you're with and you're all working towards the same goal, ultimately, you know, which is to improve cities, improve the environment. And so in, you know, I think that's an interesting, it's interesting to me that like, you know, a lot of time people think of competition as like somebody that you're supposed to like beat or whatever. And when I look back on it and sort of like what happened for me was like, these people were actually part of, you know, we were working together in some way in progressing the industry or this idea. And so drivers of innovation in effect. And so, yeah, you know, I think people should try to think about their competition in like a healthy way. And just recognize that like you all are working on the same thing ultimately. And you know, healthy competition drives innovation. So
indeed. Could I agree more on this one? Because, you know, a lot of consumer products right now in the market, you see like beers, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of beers in UK itself. We have like the best beer competition every year. And we are all working in the same industry. Just how, you know, you produce your product and how you market it, right? How you reach your customers, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So where exactly is Ascent Lab right now? Like in terms of product, do you guys already are in market? You have already the you know, the customer. How about the team? How big is, how many number of customers you have,
etc. Yeah. Yeah. So we we're in the very early stages. You know, we've been in this sort of like beta phase on the community side. It's about to be like fully publicly launched in the next week. So we're like right at the sort of like launch phase, but we have, you know, the beta customers that are in there right now and have been providing the feedback on the, you know, the sort of like service side, the agency side that I mentioned. There's about a dozen customers right now. And we're working on everything from sort of like cold outbound to landing pages to ads and creative, like, you know, that's like video, static, et cetera. And so, yeah, you know, it's great. Like it's been amazing, sort of like in this first, phase or stage. And I feel like it's like really validating that people want this, you know, this service, this community, and, are leveraging it in a really great way to grow their businesses.
Is there a compelling case study that highlights how one of your early stage customers use XN Lab solution to achieve success and solve their key business issues?
Yeah, definitely. I'll give you a couple. One that's been really fun to work on is this company called PassSpark. They're an ed tech company, and they are trying to help high school students figure out what their path is, what their next step is after high school, whether that be, you know, going into college, or figuring out like how to go into the job market, but like ultimately like figuring out who they are and what they want. And, they have a really great, you know, tool and community and sort of product that enables these students to do that. And so the challenge was trying to figure out like, how do we go out and, connect with not only these students, but like the parents, you know, who like are ultimately the decision maker, in the buying process, as well as the sort of like partnership angle. So that, you know, the schools, public charter schools, et cetera, there's like these broader partnerships out there, you know, the like YMCAs of the world, the folks that are working on like, you know, youth education and whatnot. And so, you know, we've been largely working on like, an outbound strategy, that's been working really well and resonating really well. I mean, you know, what he's working on, what PassSpark's working on is just an incredible, tool. I think a lot of, you know, everybody that's in the space that's working with teens like recognizes what the problem is, and that like people really, this is important, and people need to figure this out. And so like the messaging is resonating. And so we're like really trying to like fine tune that pitch. And so that's been a really fun one to work on. Another company that I've been working with is a company called Inveterate. They're a memberships platform, a loyalty platform for Shopify. And, you know, initially really started to work with them around building landing pages, thinking about like segmenting out, their cohorts and, you know, understanding what messaging would resonate within those landing pages. We've also been doing some work around, outbound email, and now we're moving into creative, ads as well. So that's been a fun one. So like a handful of like D2C sort of like Shopify companies, another one that's great called Refunnel. They help, make, UGC tracking and management like really easy. That's a really cool one. Another one's Prosper. They make it really easy to share, your products or your website at any point of your customer journey. So yeah, just like a ton of different, products and services across the board, and all, you know, again, sort of like leveraging these tactics, these principles in a unique way to their own business.
Right. Got it. That's really interesting that you already have multiple success stories and you're not even, you know, launched fully. You're just in your beta phase. That automatically proves me that you have a big, product market fit already there, you know, because you have already enabled other organizations to utilize the techniques, the tooling and the network you guys are, you know, sharing with them with XN Labs. So that's impressive. So this conversation is so interesting. I want to go and go on, but it's like we are heading towards the end. But before going into our lightning round, I would like to know more from like throughout your journey and experience, there must have been like some lessons learned. So if you don't mind sharing, could you reflect on your experience and tell us about more, maybe one mistake or a setback that you have encountered along the way that you consider not a regret, but a lesson learned in your, you know, life? And additionally, what advice would you give our listeners based on this experience?
Yeah. Maybe I'll give like, I'll try to give like a really hyper focused one. That's like maybe like a smaller one. And then I'll give like a broad one. the hyper focused one, that's just like something I just was thinking about, and it's kind of a silly one, but like it's an important one, just like from a growth perspective, is and it was a mistake. You know, one of the mistakes was in the early stage when you are just trying to figure out product market fit and you're trying to figure out how to grow. I think it's super important that you do not pay for an acquisition channel, like for instance, like don't pay for like a newsletter, because you don't have your messaging dialed, and it's very likely that you're just going to spend that money and it's just going to go out into the ether. And so I made that mistake before. The ROI isn't really there. Instead, offer something in return to get in that newsletter and try to give something back to that other company and in exchange. Because that the value is way greater there. You're going to build the relationship. You're still going to get in the newsletter, but you're not going to spend the capital. And so instead of spending that, you know, couple thousand bucks on that newsletter, you know, I would say there's another approach. And same goes for like ads. Like I wouldn't spend money on ads until you've like really dialed your product market fit out and have like your messaging that's like really strong and resonating. Focus on other organic channels up front early on. I think that's like a really important lesson.
No problem.
A broad lesson that I would focus on that I think is really important is, you know, you can't fail unless you stop. And so like, don't ever stop, don't ever give up. And like, I, you know, I mentioned in the beginning of this conversation, there was that moment, that one moment where I was like, if we don't get the money today, like it's going to be over sort of thing. And like, it would have only been over if we didn't get the money that day, it would have been over if I packed it in and just stopped. Right. But if we would have kept going, we would have figured it out somehow. So like, I think the lesson is never, ever, ever give up. And you can't fail if you don't stop. That's it.
Yeah. Perfect. You know, perfectly said, because I think a lot of, and it's very well known from the data that I think 96% of startups fail in their first 3 years or something. I'm guessing there's lots of factor involved, but one of the factor is that the founders give up during the journey. And I think it's a big one. So yeah, spot on with that. Great. So we should wrap up. We should go into our lightning round. So I've got 6 quick fire questions for you. So just answer them as quickly as you can. You ready?
All right.
Great. What's one of the best piece of business advice you have received?
You know, I think it's probably, you know, relationships are the most important thing, and just really, really focus on building building relationships across the industry and outside of the industry, and sort of, you know, if you build those relationships, and then it's, you know, it's about giving more than sort of taking on those as well. So yeah, that's my advice on that.
Indeed. What book would you recommend to our audience and why?
Good one. I would say, how about, what's a good one? Good to Great is a good one by Jim Collins. Just like, you know, figuring out how to like up level, Zero to One's another good one as well. Just like thinking about how to, you know, take, sort of like what you have and like figure out how to like ratchet it up and like go to the next level. So,
right. Okay. What's one attribute or characteristic in your mind of a successful founder?
Good question. You know, I would say maybe like if I could just say one of the like ones that I think everyone sort of like always talks about as like is a great founder, but I would say maybe the opposite first, and then I'll tell you the other one. I would say you know, it's like everyone loves Elon Musk, and I think I have a problem with him in just like many ways. I think, you know, it's all about being humble in your approach. And I think, you know, he kind of misses the mark there, and it just like really is like a frustrating thing for me, I think, ultimately. I think, you know, someone that like exemplified that sort of like humble approach to being a founder was like Tony Hsieh from Zappos. And like, you know, he was an amazing person and like really thoughtful about how he treated, of course, his employees, but also his customers. And so I think if you look at the two side by side, like I would rather be, you know, aligned with someone like Tony than Elon.
Elon, yeah. Makes sense. What's your favorite personal productivity tool or habit?
Definitely a bunch of really good ones out there. I think like Notion's such a great one. You can do so many things with it. And whether it's like, you know, documenting all your information or like launching sort of like your creative calendar or you know, just like managing all of your processes in one place, like Notion's like the sort of like go-to tool for sure.
Yeah. Okay. What's a new or a crazy business idea you would love to pursue if you had time?
Oh, that is a fun one. Oh man, so many. I mean, you know, I'll just like kind of tell you, I've just like a couple like fun little side hustles that I've been working on. Just, you know, nothing like I would say that's like crazy, but like fun ones because just things that I've always wanted to do. Like one, I love coffee. And so, I've been building this coffee brand, Dusk and Dawn. And, so that's like it's a coffee brand that's focused on, you know, allowing people to control the amount of caffeine consumption they take while still being able to enjoy coffee. So there's sort of three different products. One is a morning blend that has like a lot of caffeine to kick the day off. One's a afternoon blend that's like really nice and mild. And then there's a decaf blend at the end of the day. So that's something I've been working on just like, you know, in the spare minutes that I have. and trying to launch that pretty soon. The other one, is a really cool tool that I've been building with some folks. It's called West Coast Road Trip. It's a fun little tool to enable people to, if you want to go on a journey on the West Coast and you know, you want this itinerary of all the great places to go in whatever your trip might be, you can quickly build that. Right now it's hyper focused on the West Coast, but you know, the idea is obviously to scale that eventually. So
yeah. Very interesting. And what's an interesting or a fun fact about you that most people don't know?
Good one. I've been to some of my travels, you know, from the jump days. I've been to 30 countries, which is a fun one. And I guess maybe while that sounds like, might sound like it was like a glamorous time or something, I'll tell you, it was amazing, but I was living out of a bag, early days of Airbnb too, you know, finding the craziest, weirdest places to keep costs low. And, while it was amazing to explore the world like that, at this stage of my life, don't know if I could do it like I did it then.
That's always the fun part, isn't it? Hostel days, I call them hostel days. Great stuff. Justin, thank you so much for joining me and sharing your story, unpacking the last few years of building the business and some of the ups and downs. If people want to check out SN Labs and if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So check out snlabs.co. That's our website. Would love to see you in the community. You can find me on LinkedIn, Justin Wiley, and you know, search Ascend Labs and you'll see me there. And then, yeah, if you want to reach out directly, justin@ascendlabs.co.
Great. Justin, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your inspiring journey and the impactful work you're doing through Ascend Lab. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on Founders Podcast.
Hey, Ash, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate it. Great to see you.
Great. Thank you all for tuning in to this episode of Founders Podcast. I hope you found our conversation with Justin insightful and inspiring. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and stay updated on future interviews with proven founders and industry experts. Stay inspired, stay motivated, and keep building.